Time for this week's Sports Lit 101. Bruce in the house with us, as he is every Wednesday afternoon. What are we talking about this week, Bruce?
Well, I got this book from the University of Illinois Press by Gregory J. Kalis called Beyond the Black Power Salute, Athlete Activism in an Era of Change. And it doesn't have a lot of chapters, but it reads, it's almost like an anthology. And I think probably every one of these chapters was something that he was working on to publish. And, you know, we've had John Carlos on. We've talked a lot about the 68 Olympics. We've talked about Harry Edwards. We've talked about a lot of the people who were involved in that. But what's really interesting is what happens next in America. And I remembered a few of these things because I was 17 in 68. So by the time 1969 rolled around, I was pretty tied into current events being of draft age, right? Mm. There were a lot of things that I was paying attention to. But one of the things that struck me and my friend Joel Schrantz is a really fine scholar. He's in Philadelphia now. He's from North Carolina. He was part of a documentary on what was a strike at the University of North Carolina in the late 60s, where not only did black students and black athletes begin a certain amount of protests over things which we'll talk about in a second, but one of their big concerns was the way cafeteria and health and food workers were being treated. They were being treated abysmally. They were being paid next to nothing. They were being forced to work long hours if they missed a day or two of work for whatever reason. And they combined this into one effort. And you know, as University of Maine's graduate students are considering currently unionizing, I think about how that was also one of the other things that was a topic of the time. Now, one of the most legendary coaches in the history of basketball is Dean Smith. And that's a guy I got to meet when I was, I think, probably about 15, and seemed to me to be a good guy. I mean, what do you know when you're 15? You meet a legend, you shake their hand, they pat you on the back, where are you from? You tell them, oh, I recruited a kid from Connecticut, whatever, bang. But in most cases where African-American athletes who were being treated less well than whites were being screwed on medical treatment, were often being forced into certain positions on teams and not allowed to participate in other positions, while they were beginning to protest, the coaches in most cases were shutting them down. But jump ahead for a second to the Wyoming 14. When the University of Wyoming African-American players wanted to talk to their coach about not having to play by BYU, because at the time the Mormon Church had a white superiority statement, mission statement, that, and when even missionaries would tell black people if they became Mormons, they would turn white when they went to heaven. All right. Suddenly, when BYU was under a lot of fire, the Mormon Church's elders had a revelation that this was no longer what God and Brigham Young wanted for them, so they changed those rules. But a lot of schools, including Stanford, which refused to play BYU over this, were very concerned about that. And the same way that you think about Syracuse saying, we're not going to the bowl game if we can't bring all of our black players in 1959 to play in the South. So what happened was these 14 African-American, and this includes Tony McGee, some other guys that had pretty good NFL careers, they go to the coach's office to talk to him about it, and they're all wearing black armbands, and he throws them all off the team, saying they broke team rules and the like. That starts a series of lawsuits. The players lose those lawsuits. They lose their scholarships. And shortly after, the NCAA says, well, scholarships are not for 4 years anymore. They can be year by year, which of course meant that as soon as you didn't like someone as a freshman, you could just cut their scholarship. Mm. So the Wyoming 14 lose their case in court. They won it among the faculty. The faculty who are on the committee voted 37-1 to have them reinstated. The governor of Wyoming said, no, they can't be reinstated. The players said, wait a minute, this is the equality state. That's not Wyoming's nickname, right? Well, cycle that back to Charlie Scott, who was a great basketball player. Anybody that saw him play was a wiry guard. He was tall for a guard, as I remember, maybe 6'5", 6'6". And he was the second black player to play at North Carolina on scholarship. The other one was a fellow by the name of Chamberlain. Scott did so well his freshman year, was chosen for the Olympic team. And of course, you've got Harry Edwards trying to tell everybody, don't go to the Olympics. We want to boycott the Olympics. Charlie Scott said, no, I want to prove that integration works. I'm going to go play on the U.S. Olympic team. He does. He comes back to North Carolina just as the turmoil is starting to build. And Joel can detail this in much greater, can explain this in much greater detail next week. He was encouraged to join the protest movement. And he went to Dean Smith and he talked about it. And Dean Smith said, you have a right to do that. Yes, you can do that. So Smith comes off as a pretty, this is in North Carolina, comes off as a pretty forward-thinking guy. You know, I don't want you to get, you know, I guess he probably told him, I don't want you to get into anything violent or anything that's going to cause a lot of trouble, but you have a right to express your opinion. So what happens is North Carolina goes on to become a dynasty in men's college basketball, and it increases because they finally, this strike makes them think to recruit more athletes. It will eventually lead to more coaches and administrators who are African American, and North Carolina will have a few. They'll have a few pretty famous black players over the years. Wyoming goes the other way and shuts these guys down. And what happens the next year? They go 1-9. They can't recruit any American, any African Americans. And I didn't realize this, but in 65, 66, 67, 68, Wyoming was ranked in the top 25 every one of those years, including the top 10 one of those years. When Don Eaton was there. So it shows what this chapter is titled is College Athletes Flex Their Muscles. And it shows just how much its overall effect on society at large that these people had an effect. There was the Troy State situation where a number of black athletes and Troy State had some problems and they ended up all leaving. And then there's this very, very sad case of Muldrew. I think his first name is Will, as I recall, who was a star player at Iowa State, joined a black protest movement on campus. Johnny Majors then immediately, no wonder he did so well at Tennessee, demoted him to second string. Muldrew quit because he was an all-conference player the year before, and that's the Big Eight back then. It was a pretty good conference. Teams like Nebraska in the Big Eight, you know, Oklahoma. He sadly was on his way to the CFL when he was shot by his girlfriend, which didn't have anything maybe to do with that. But what I like about this book, and I've read a good section of it, not all of it, is it's quick. It gets to the point. It talks about important things. Some of the quotes from some of the players. It really links the way that major people like Jim Brown and Muhammad Ali and Curt Flood and people like that had influence on college athletes when they had no rights whatsoever. I mean, they had no rights. The NCAA had rights to their likenesses. The NCAA could, you know, coaches could tell a kid they couldn't have a mustache in the off season, and they could throw them off a team if they did. And there was. You know, which, I mean, that applied obviously to non-African-American players too. But the way that the players could be brought in and simply used for their benefit and have nowhere near the rights and privileges of white players. And these are in states that did not have Jim Crow laws. I mean, these were universities in the Midwest and out in the far West that just chose to treat these athletes as a commodity. I need a running back. I need some wide receivers. I don't need any offensive or defensive linemen or quarterbacks that are black. They, you know, they're not going to play that. It was the athletes that changed that. The media, some, but it was really the athletes who forced the universities to see what the future was. And surprisingly, one of the more open-minded people about that was Bear Bryant. And he was convinced by the athletes themselves that, you know, Alabama better wake up. There's a famous call between him and Vince Dooley back in the 60s that I've heard. I couldn't find. Look for it today to see if there was it was still online. If it's online, it's got to be there somewhere, where he talked about it. And he said, basically, if we don't take black athletes, I think they probably said colored athletes at that time. But if we don't take black athletes, we're not going to be on the national stage anymore. That we're going to lose that. And so it was Dooley and Bryant who basically turned the SEC around on that. And, you know, Bryant was not known early on when he was at Texas A&M or Kentucky of being someone who was an advocate for integration on his teams. So it was pretty interesting. But we'll talk to Joel about that strike because, as I say, he was part of a documentary I saw on it. And then we'll come back to this, I think in June, there are a couple of other chapters we'll look at. But it's called Beyond the Black Power Salute, Athlete Activism in an Era of Change by Gregory J. Kalis. It is from the University of Illinois Press, and it's a really good book. It also looks at the definition of black masculinity that changed after that, but so far, very impressed.
Excellent. I look forward to reading that and talking about it. What else have we got in the weeks ahead on Sports
Weeks
Lit?
Ahead. Well, next week, Joel will be here to talk with us about this. The week after, Rick Burton will join us by Zoom and Norman O'Reilly in studio on the 10th to talk about their book, The Business of the NHL, which was really, really opened my eyes a lot. The next 2 weeks will be Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, or Zoom. Janet and I are driving to Florida, and we're going down the civil rights trail for a lot of it. We're going to go to Memphis and see the stuff there. I'm going to show her the Delta Blues Trail, which she has never seen. Then we're going to head over to Birmingham and Montgomery and visit some of the sites there. Again, which she has not seen, I have, and then visit my dad in Florida for part of a week, and then head back and hopefully see Don and Johnson and his wife Carolyn on the way back, and get ready for the June SLA.
Very nice. Good stuff indeed.